This is Leanne Wright Gray, the Assistant Elementary Principal at Cayman International School. We are chatting this morning with Ken O'Connor, who is working with our teachers and administration this week on the topic of assessment, grading, and reporting. Ken has very kindly agreed to spend some time responding to frequently asked questions about standards-based grading and reporting for our parents. We are joined also by Jamie Farrell, who is our elementary instructional coach, and the two Chads, Chad Van Cleve and Chad McGartland, who are our secondary instructional coaches. Good morning, everyone. Ken, I wonder if you might start us off by giving a brief overview of your experience with grading and reporting, and maybe just some insight into the work you've done over the years with other schools and districts.
At one point in my career, I became a curriculum coordinator in a school district, and part of my responsibilities were assessment and evaluation. And in that role, I became increasingly aware of the role of grading and sometimes the unfortunate impacts that it had. And so basically through 1994, the latter part of 1994, I started to really study what were the issues around grading. And I developed 8 guidelines for grading that were published in an article in May of 1995. And when I did that, I thought, well, you know, this was interesting and that's it. But it was an important issue then. And 23 years later, it is still a really important issue in schools. And so I've had the opportunity over now a long period of time to work with schools to think about and talk about the ways that we can make grading fit what I believe are the 4 critical qualities. Grades have to be accurate, they have to be consistent, they have to be meaningful, and they have to be supportive of learning.
What has motivated you to work with such commitment in the field of assessment and reporting, and how did you come to believe in standards-based grading?
I see this as a critical area in terms of what is the focus of schools and the focus for especially students and parents, that we have traditionally had what I would call a culture of grading. The question that was always asked was, what is my grade? What can I do to make my grade better? And I believe that the focus should be on learning, that what students should be asking is, what can I do to improve my learning? And parents should be asking, what can my child do to improve their learning? And so I've really focused on the idea that there are things that we can do in the assessment and grading process that are supportive of learning. And overall, I believe the advantage of that is that we develop students as self-directed, reflective learners, with the emphasis on learners. And in that way, we prepare them well for whatever they do beyond K-12. I think traditionally we've done a really good job of preparing students, especially to get into post-secondary education, but we haven't necessarily done a very good job of preparing them to be successful in post-secondary education or whatever beyond that. Because to succeed beyond high school, students or people have to be self-directed learners. And I don't believe we get that from traditional grading, but I do believe we get it from standards-based grading.
Based on the question from before, can you highlight some of the specific benefits of standards-based reporting for students, teachers, and families?
I believe the most specific benefit is that standards-based grading and reporting provide a rich picture of students as learners, and that is incredibly valuable information for students and parents. And I think it comes from the fact that in 2018, we know a lot more about how students learn. We know a lot more about effective assessment. We know a lot more about effective communication. We have a lot more communication tools available to us than we did 10 years ago, 20 years ago, for example, when probably the parents of most of our students were in school. And, you know, things have changed dramatically in so many areas. I mean, if we go to our dentist or our doctor, they're not doing things the way they did 20 years ago because they know more. Lots of information has come out of research. And it's the same in schools, in education. We know a lot more now in 2018 than we did previously. And based on that knowledge, we should be doing things differently. And I think we really can benefit students and parents by providing more comprehensive information about their children as a learner.
Just on that note, could you maybe give us one example of something that is new learning for us in terms of how assessment works and how it's used today?
Well, we know, for example, that critical to anybody learning anything, whether they're 4 years old learning to read or an adult trying to develop a new skill, or we have to be able to self-assess. I mean, one of the things that we learned from the learning research was that self-assessment is absolutely critical. You can't really learn anything. You can't get better at anything until you can self-assess. But self-assessment is a learned skill. It's not something that you do automatically or at least automatically well. And so part of a standards-based approach is developing students as self-assessors, developing students as reflective learners.
Okay.
Great. Thanks for that. So based on that, how do you see standards-based grading and reporting helping students who are struggling to learn? And conversely, how do you see that it might be good for students to learn more quickly?
I think the benefit is that when we do standards-based grading and reporting, we provide profiles of learning. In traditional grading, what we have only done is provide a single letter grade. And so we may have, so for the first group, you said the students that were struggling, what they may get on a report card is a whole series of Ds if we were using letter grades, which could be pretty deflating, I guess. But if for that student we are doing standards-based, there are almost certain to be some standards that they're quite good at, maybe some they're really good at. And so when we do standards-based, even for students who are struggling, there will almost certainly be some areas where they're doing quite well. And it seems to me that is very, very motivating for students, that it's not just this D's across the board. And so I think that's really important for the struggling learner. I think for the students who learn more quickly, it's basically the same thing. We identify for those students where are their areas of strength and where are their areas that need improvement. So, for example, a student who gets straight A's may look at that report card and say, oh, okay, I'm fine and everything. But almost certainly, at least the way we've done grades traditionally, that student has areas where they could improve. And so when we do standards-based for those students, they can also see that it's not just about a single summary, that we have a picture of them as a learner. They get a picture of themselves as a learner. And so they can do things to get better, because wherever you are on the spectrum, you can always get better.
So for school communities, what are some of the challenges involved in a shift to standards-based grading, and what are the best ways to address these challenges?
I think there are challenges in two main areas. There are challenges about the clarity of why. Why are we doing standards-based as opposed to ways that we used to do things? And the other area of challenge is around the performance standards. How do we identify the levels of at which the students are achieving? Because in a standards-based system, that is very different from how we did it traditionally, which was very much based on most commonly points and percentages. And in a true standards-based system, we get away from points and percentages, and we have clear descriptions of a somewhat limited number of levels of proficiency. And that really is a huge difference, and maybe the single biggest difference from what we did traditionally. So I think the biggest challenges are around why, and they're around our performance standards. How good is good enough?
So based on what you just stated, what is problematic, or what should be problematic to parents when they receive a report that has points and percentages?
The basic problem is that points and percentages on their own mean nothing. They have to be within a context. And the best example I can give to illustrate that is, what does 80% mean? 80% for a pilot landing a plane is completely unsatisfactory. 80% in many skill areas is completely impossible. And for me, the best example of that, and I hope it works for people, is hitting in baseball. The best hitter, the only time ever in baseball history, modern baseball history, that somebody hit at a 40% level was once. 40% is excellent beyond excellence. 20% is minimum competency. So in hitting in baseball, 20% is minimum competency. 40% is excellence beyond excellence. You put that into a school setting, and almost always we consider 20 to 40% to be a low level of performance. And so those numbers don't mean anything of themselves. It depends, in my baseball example, the difficulty of the skill. Hitting a baseball coming at you at 95 miles an hour and swerving all over the place is extremely difficult. So that what we have to look at is really, how good is good enough? Is it proficient? And it's not a fixed number. And we've traditionally sort of said 90 to 100 is an A. But 90% might not be a good level of performance, for example, in landing a plane. 90% is equally, we've said the reverse at the lower end. So that it really depends on the difficulty of the skill, the difficulty of the concept, and the difficulty of the assessment. Because the points and percentages in and of themselves don't mean anything. They have to be related to that. So if we're talking about difficult things or critical things like landing a plane, then it's a very different idea of points and percentages than if we're talking about things that are much easier.
And further to that, you kind of mentioned this idea of points and percentages in the sense that with the difficulty of skill, can you speak to the idea of averaging some of those skills together within a class as well and how that might be problematic?
Yeah, averaging unlike things is very problematic. I mean, I think one of the things that we can look at in all sorts of aspects of how we've done grading is that it goes against what we teach in math class. I mean, we teach in math class that you can't average apples and oranges, but we do it all the time in our grade books. For it to be meaningful, we have to be summarizing around the same things and not putting together things that are different.
Thank you.
One thing we have found in our shift to standards-based reporting is that it has made it really essential that we are clear in advance what the concepts and competencies are that we want our students to demonstrate at the end of a sequence of learning. So if there are gaps or misconceptions that need addressing, or if our plans aren't really well aligned to our learning goals, that becomes really obvious when we are required to assess and report to specific standards. Can you talk a little about that?
Yes, absolutely. And I think it's what one person that does similar work to what I do calls developing a standards-based mindset. Mm-hmm. That we have to see the standards as, in a sense, the focus of everything that we're doing. Mm-hmm. We plan, our curriculum is standards-based, our instruction is standards-based, our assessment is standards-based. And the dialogue that we have amongst teachers, with students and with parents is about the standards.
And thinking about that too, and we're talking about, you know, mistakes in the learning process, how can standards-based reporting and grading help our students, you know, recognize their mistakes and learn from those in their learning process?
Well, I think it's really important that we understand that learning is a process. The whole idea of learning is that next week we know and understand or can do things better than we could now. And that is a process where we sometimes get it wrong at the beginning. We make mistakes. Sometimes maybe we take risks and it doesn't work. And that those are really important things for students to be able to do and to feel that they can do it without it having negative consequences on their grade. And so it's really important that we make the clear distinction between learning activities and assessment activities. The learning activities are where those mistakes are going to be made, where they're not going to get it right away. The assessment activities are after they've had that opportunity, after they've had that opportunity to make mistakes, find out what those mistakes are, overcome them. Then we do an assessment where we say, yeah, this is where the student is at, and that information will be part of our overall judgment. But ultimately, I guess it's about what we sometimes hear, does this count? You know? And what students mean when they ask this is, does it count for in my grade? What we need that to sort of morph to is, yes, everything counts. Some as practice, some as learning, and some as performance. And it's the performance that gets evaluated.
Thank you, Ken.
I want to thank you for distinguishing between learning activity and assessment activity, because that's terminology I've needed in my own life to describe my teaching. So thank you for that. But I don't know if you would be willing to make this leap, but I'm gonna ask it. Would you say that in a standards-based grading situation, students are more able to take risks in problem-solving situations, or are more able to learn from their failure, but because they were able to take the risk?
Absolutely. I mean, because we develop in students in a standards base the understanding that learning is a process, and that it's absolutely fine to admit that you made a mistake, that you're not getting it. I mean, I'll never forget a number of years ago, I was in a high school physics classroom, and I don't know a lot about physics because I never did it in high school. And the teacher was doing some review after they'd been learning some physics concepts. And what really impressed me in that classroom was how willing the students were to say, I don't understand this, or I'm not quite getting this principle, this thing. And that was so different than most, I would be willing to bet, so different from most high school physics classrooms, where students will not admit that they don't know, that if they do that, they would feel incredibly vulnerable. But in a standards-based classroom, it's absolutely fine to say, I don't get it, I made a mistake, because everybody understands that that's the way we get better.
Right. And there's also a clarity around the learning expectations.
Yeah.
And goals, because in a traditional system, they're not really spelled out. They might be in the teacher's head sometimes, but not make it to the student's head.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Do you think that the standards base also helps the students communicate their own learning in that process and where they are, so they can, they're a real part of the learning process themselves?
Yes, they are and must be a real part of the learning process. I mean, there are, I consider, three learning questions. Where am I going? Where am I now? And what do I need to close the gap or get better? And a standards-based system, when it's done well, whether we're talking about, you know, early elementary or end of high school, students at any point and in any classroom can answer those questions.
Fantastic. Thank you. Ken, as members of an international school community, our parents need to be sure that our report cards will be accepted by other schools around the world, as well as colleges and universities. What has been your experience of how standards-based report cards are received by the wider educational community?
What I think is interesting is that if I was going to characterize where I think there's been the greatest movement to standards-based grading and reporting, I think it would be in international schools. Obviously, there's a lot of movement towards it in public schools in North America as well. But I think I see more comprehensive movement. So really, doing standards-based grading and reporting to a large extent is where the international school community is. And so absolutely, standards-based report cards will be accepted if it's a matter of sort of moving to other schools, because, and I mean, I don't know what the proportion is, but a significant number of international schools are heavily into standards-based grading and reporting. And so I don't see that would be any difficulty. When it comes to high school, quite a number of different organizations have approached post-secondary institutions and said, if we do a standards-based report card but still have grades on it for subjects, will that in any way disadvantage our students? And as far as I know, every university that's been approached on that has said, absolutely not. If the grades are more accurate, then that's what we want. And I would contend that standards-based grading gets grades that are much more accurate than traditional grades.
Can I follow up? Have you ever heard of or have you ever noticed any issues with integrating IB courses with a standards-based grading system?
I don't think there are any really significant difficulties with that, in as far as the standards, the IB system is a standards-based system. I mean, it's based, I know they have different numbers of levels, or they used to have a different number of levels, but now it's pretty much consistent with the idea of seven levels. So IB is a standards-based system, certainly in terms of the performance standards. And so I don't see it as really being a difficulty in any way. In many ways, I think IB schools, IB teachers, in the general sense, should be able to do standards-based, in a sense, more easily, because it's always been a system of levels.
And on that same note, I mean, speaking of parents and their concerns for kids and wanting to support their children's learning, when parents get these standards-based report cards at home, how can they go about using them to support their children's learning?
When parents get the report cards, I think what they have to look at is, what does it show about the strengths of their child? What does it show about areas for improvement? And then what obviously follows from that, what are the next steps, especially if there are significant areas that need improvement? What are the things that the student should be doing? What are the things that the parent can do to support the child? And what are the things that they can look to the school to be doing? And so ultimately, it's about strengths, it's about areas of improvement and next steps. It's not about what is their overall grade for a subject, because saying they've got B for math doesn't really tell you anything about what can be done to get better. Mm-hmm. It's which are the standards they're doing well on, which are the ones that they're not doing so well on, that gives us the information for where do we go from here.
Mm-hmm. And then just on that note as well, thinking about learning as being kind of a whole child activity. We know about academic strengths, and we also have some behavior for learning things, work habits and so on that are going on. At our school, we're using our narratives on the report card to report on behavior for learning and work habits. Can you talk a bit about what other schools you've seen are doing?
What has become fairly common with the work habits, the behaviors, the learning skills, whatever you want to call them, is that they actually choose a number and put them on the report card. And so that you now increasingly, I would say it's become very common, almost the norm at the elementary level. It's become fairly common at the middle school level. It's still not all that common at the high school level, but I would contend that it's actually most important at the high school level, because it's only at the high school level that grades are high stakes. And so it's critical at the high school level that we separate achievement from behavior, because if we put achievement and behavior together, we really don't know what grades mean. Mm-hmm. I mean, some students will get a higher grade because they're a lovely young person, they smile sweetly, they color between the lines, they do everything that's ever asked of them and more. Some students will get lower grades than they really deserve because they don't exhibit all the behaviors that we would like. And so if we separate achievement and behavior, if we identify some behaviors that we value, then we're able to report on both of those, and we can have accurate information about both. We have accurate information about academic achievement, and we have accurate information about what are the behaviors that the school says matter most.
Mm-hmm. And those behaviors, then, you would hope would be things that are observable, measurable in some way.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think they should, as much as possible, be derived from the school's mission and vision, because generally speaking, our mission and vision statements say what we're about, the type of students we're trying to develop. And so those, a lot of that are those behaviors, work habits, approaches to learning.
Very nice. Thank you.
Okay, a good example of that for me is my granddaughter, who academically does very well, but in Ontario, where we live, we have 6 learning skills on the report card. They're the same 6 learning skills. They're reported once for students from grade 1 to grade 8, and they're reported by subjects for grades 9 to grade 12. And my granddaughter, almost always on her report card, gets the lowest level, needs improvement for self-regulation. She reads very well. She writes very well. Almost everything she does academically, she does very well. And that's important information. But it's also important to recognize that this behavior, which may not be causing serious learning problems now, almost certainly will in the future. And so it's critical that my granddaughter try to get better at self-regulation, that her parents help her to get better at self-regulation, and her teachers help her to get better at self-regulation. But if that behavior wasn't identified, then that information wouldn't be available to work on with her.
Right. And it also, sorry, Chad.
Go ahead.
It also kind of forces us to be aware not only of the problem and how it might be affecting learning now or in the future, it also forces us to have some thinking about strategies.
Yeah.
How specifically are we going to build self-regulation in that child or other skills?
Yeah.
And I realize there's probably isn't like a hard number, but would you say that there is a reasonable number of behaviors that a school should report on, regardless of the age or division level?
I think a reasonable number of behaviors is somewhere between 3 and 6. I mean, I don't think there's much point in doing it if we don't identify at least 3 behaviors, because then if we do that, there'll still be behaviors that teachers somehow or other want to work into the grade. I think we probably shouldn't do much more than 6, because I think to do more than 6 really puts a very difficult burden on teachers, because if they're evaluating behaviors, they have to be able to do that just as well as they evaluate academic achievement. And I think it's unreasonable to expect teachers to be able to do that for much more than, and I think also that probably much more than 6 is probably overwhelming for parents. I think we want it to be clearly focused on the behaviors that we value most. Now, as I said, in Ontario, we use the same 6. I'm not necessarily saying that I think it's best to do the same 6 from all the way from grade 1 to grade 12. I think, you know, a case could be made that there are certain behaviors that are really important. Let's say from grade 1 to grade 3, there might be some that are different up to the end of elementary. There might be some that are a little different from middle school and high school. So I think it should be done across a school. I think it's something that should be being done all the way. But it doesn't have to be absolutely uniform. It needs to be consistent but not uniform. We should be doing it all the way through, but not necessarily exactly the same behaviors. And so those are choices that mm-hmm. schools can make.
Mm-hmm. I like what you said too there, is connecting it to your values and your mission statement and who we are as a school.
Yeah.
I think that's important too, thinking about international schools. We try to create this identity of who we are,
mm-hmm.
and having our students know that mm-hmm. and who they are as a part of that culture, I think is going to be really important.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's true. We put a lot of thought into mm-hmm. what behaviors kids yeah. need here in this context.
Yeah, I mean, what we do, obviously in everything, but I think particularly what we do in assessment, grading and reporting, we should be thinking about, is what we're doing aligned with what we believe?
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it is and sometimes it's not.
From your vantage point, are there any other changes or improvements you see coming down the pipeline in ways that schools report on learning?
The way that I see things changing is an increasing emphasis on what is sometimes called 21st century skills, the skills that are necessary for the students we have in school now to be successful in an economy that's very different from the economy when parents started off or when most teachers started off.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I have seen the development of is transcripts that are not organized by subject, transcripts that aren't organized by grade 9 history and so on, but organized by those what are identified as being the most important skills. And so, for example, there's an organization called the Mastery Transcript Consortium that is initially was a consortium of 50 pretty well-known American private schools. It expanded to, I think, about 100. And recently they opened it up both to international schools and to public high schools. And I believe now they have something in the vicinity of 150 member schools who are moving towards the idea that the high school transcript will look very different, that it won't be subject-based, it will be skills-based, and the evidence of those skills will come from different subjects.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. And so then, just to follow along from that, obviously there are things behind the assessment reporting that have changed in terms of teaching and learning. So more generally, what changes are you seeing out there as far as education goes?
I think the biggest changes are around the involvement of students in the learning process, in the assessment process, and really the whole personalization and focusing on the student as the learner. And so the student that should be clear about who they are, what they're learning, why they're learning it, and I guess more able to follow their passions and interests.
Mm-hmm. On that note, do you have any advice on trying to make that shift?
I think in making that shift, we have to be very clear about, first of all, why we're doing it and what are the ways that make it effective and what are the barriers to making it effective. And I think in many cases, it's around understanding that a lot of the things that we've done at the elementary level actually will work pretty well at the middle school and the high school level. That I think we have been far more willing to personalize learning at elementary and that it works well, and especially for students that have had that experience through elementary and maybe middle school, the same thing should continue at the high school level. I think way too often things change dramatically from the elementary to middle school, especially, and that really the way students learn should be a continuum all the way through.
Mm-hmm. For adults, too, at the end of the day.
Absolutely.
We all learn the same way.
Yeah.
Very true.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you very much, Ken, for your thoughts today.
Okay.
And I'm sure we'll be learning a lot more from you in the days to follow.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.